All right, 6 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order. Please silence any cell phones or any other devices you have. Thanks. My name is Jeff Pobart. I'm the section chief of the Water Quality and Permitting Section of the Division of Water Resources. I've been appointed by Linda Culpepper, who's the director of the Division of Water Resources, to preside tonight's evening meeting. Is there any dignitaries or elected officials that wish to be recognized at this time?
Okay.
Any dignitaries or elected officials that wish to be recognized? Okay. I would also like to recognize the staff from the Division of Water Resources and the Division of Soil and Water Conservation. If they could please stand up. They're out at the table too. Okay, this meeting is being held under the authority of the North Carolina General Statutes, Chapter 143, 215, and Title 15A of the North Carolina Administrative Code, Subchapter 2T. A public notice for this meeting was published in newspapers throughout the state. Notices were also sent to appropriate officials, agencies, and organizations, and other persons thought to be interested in tonight's meeting. The purpose of this meeting is to obtain public comment on the draft state general permits for swine, cattle, and poultry operations with liquid waste management systems. Comments may also be submitted in writing, and the address found in tonight's handout, and equal weight is given to both oral and written comments. This is the second of two public meetings. The previous meeting was held in Keenesville last Tuesday on February 19th. I will now ask John Risgard of the Division of Water Resources, Animal Feeding, Permitting, Operations, and Groundwater Protection Section in the Raleigh Central Office to present on the proposed permit changes and development history. Following tonight's presentation, we will be receiving comments starting with those who signed up first.
Let's have this mic.
Yes.
Is that any better for those of you in the back? All right. Just a quick check, is that better? Thanks, Jeff. As he mentioned, I'm going to give just a quick overview of why we're here and then get into some of the changes that are in the proposed draft permits that you could have collected when you came in today. And then again, reiterate how you can submit comments if you are choosing not to provide oral comments here today, how you can submit them via mail or email. We're here to talk about the state general permits for animal waste management systems. These are permits that set expectations, requirements for the management of animal waste generated in animal feeding operations. And animal feeding operations is defined through General Statute 143.215.10b. The current permit was issued October 1st, 2014, and will expire September 30th, 2019. And so this is the renewal of those permits to try to continue coverage for existing operations. These permits, as Jeff mentioned, there's three of them. They are different. There's one for swine animal feeding operations, one for cattle animal feeding operations, and one for poultry animal feeding operations that use a liquid waste management system. The permits are generally the same, but there are differences between three, so it's important that that you read all of them, if you're interested in all of them, or the ones that you have coverage under. These permits are issued under the authority of North Carolina Administrative Code, Title 15A, Subchapter 2T, for animal waste management systems. And these are all considered non-discharge permits that allow for the application of the waste to the land surface. There was a number of different handouts that were available to you when you came in the door. There was a red line permits for all three permits, as well as the attachments that go with these permits. There was a summary sheet that covers all of the proposed changes in the permit. Those condition by condition gives you a little bit more of an explanation of those changes. And there was a fact sheet, and the fact sheet provides a lot of the information that I'm going to talk about here today, gives the regulatory authority for the permits, as well as the detailed information on how to submit written comments, either by email There's email addresses for all three of the permits or by mail. If you didn't pick those up, make sure you do. They'll be available all night tonight. The permits are divided into seven different sections. And again, it's just try to organize the permit in a way that it's easy to read and easy to find permit conditions when you're looking for them. Section one is performance standards. Section two, operation and maintenance requirements. Section three, monitoring and reporting requirements. Section four, inspection and entry. Section five are general conditions. So these are conditions that apply to the majority of our non-discharge systems. Section six is penalties. And finally, eight, a definition of terms. In the proposed permits, there's three basic types of changes that I'm going to kind of introduce. There's formatting changes. And these changes are updates to the names of the department, directors, dates of the permit. It's where we found that permit conditions were redundant, we removed them, and then we've added statute and or administrative code references to every condition in an attempt to increase transparency. An example is, here's a general condition, number five, and after the permit language in brackets is where we put that regulatory reference. It's not highlighted in the permits, just highlighted for your reference here. So this particular one has the authority of general statute as well as administrative code. For those that are interested, you can look up that authority. There's a number of required changes. These reflect updates to the statute and administrative code. In 2018, the 2T rules were readopted, so there's a number of things that are now in the state administrative code that need to be reflected in the general permit. And the third kind of changes are technical changes. These are attempts or proposed language to clarify language to make sure that it adheres with statute or administrative code requirements. I'm not going to cover all of the proposed changes, but I'm trying to highlight, I guess, some of the more major ones. Just trying to educate a little bit and get you more familiar with what's in the permit. We've expanded the preamble and the permit description quite a bit, just to provide clarity on what activities are and are not covered under the general permits. In condition 1-1.4, there's changes to what are the requirements for amendments or major changes to the certified animal waste management plan. An amendment is a change that must be submitted to the division with 30 days after the amendment is made by the technical specialist, while a major change must be submitted and approved prior to implementation of that. Condition 1-1.9 is a new requirement. The permit, as it went out to comment, establishes a phosphorus index, a range of 275 to 400. And the condition would be, if the phosphorus index is greater than the number that would be in the permit, a phosphorus loss assessment tool would be run on those fields. And whatever the results of that assessment would be, could reduce or require that always be applied at the phosphorus limit instead of nitrogen as the permit reads now. This is a condition that we're specifically seeking public comment on to see if the P index is an appropriate trigger, and if it is, what range it would be appropriate in the permit. Condition 1.12 is an update to setbacks. This is an example of where the language is reflective of administrative code and statute that wasn't in there previously. Condition 2.10 is an update on the mortality management language. We're removing the reference to normal mortality and we're listing requirements if a burial is used as the means of disposal. Condition 2.23 are updates to clarify the intent of waste applications to cease 24 hours before a major storm event, tropical storm, or hurricane. Condition 2.24, this is a new condition that may require the permittee to install rain breakers on irrigation equipment within 12 months of issuance of the general permit. This condition mirrors language in the current NPDES permit that applies to some facilities as well.
Condition 229 sets a deadline for removal of hay bales stored on farms due within 24 months of cutting. Condition 311 is a condition requiring groundwater monitoring for facilities within 100 years, within a 100-year floodplain. And accompanying that condition, conditions 312 through 14 are site, well siting requirements and other groundwater-related requirements. Condition 315 increases the record retention requirement from 3 years to 5 years. And condition 318 is a new requirement for an annual report. This is the attachment A that accompanies the permit, and that's also available to you in the back. Definition sections, there's a number of changes here. In particular, there's new definitions for the terms discharge, expansion, facilities, and land application area. Oral comments that we received during the meeting today are being recorded. Written comments may be provided today as well. Hand it to the hearing officer, myself, or any of the department staff, and we'll get it to the hearing officer for consideration. The public comment period is open until March 4th. The general permit is, we expect the general permit to be effective October 1st, 2019. Again, current permit expires September 30th, 2019. Just kind of as a note, applications must be sent in 180 days before expiration. So if you have a current permit, April 3rd is when those renewals should be sent in. Again, the comment period will close March 4th, 2019. I'll leave this slide up for the remainder of the hearing. It has email addresses. You can send comments specifically to the permit you're interested in. However, we'll consider all the comments for all the permits. So if you have a comment that would apply to all three permits, you can just send it to one of the three. Also, mailing address is provided, so you can send it in however you want. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
All right, that concludes the presentation by the Division of Water Resources. At this time, we'll allow here for those in the audience that indicate their registration or they would like to provide comments. I will call those who initially registered to speak first. When finished, those in the audience who would like to provide comments, they will be given the opportunity to do so. If you've registered to speak or wish to give your time to another speaker, you may do so. However, that time will not be made available until after all the registered speakers have made their presentations. All presentations will be limited to 3 minutes. The time will be enforced by division staff who provide you signals. Would the end of the timer mean? Please keep your comments concise and limit them to tonight's subjects. Please address your comments to the hearing officer when providing your comments. Presenters are encouraged to provide written comments that address the subject tonight means in greater detail. While the comments are being provided, please be respectful of each speaker, refrain from applause or making comments during or at the completion of the speaker's comments. Cross-examination of persons presenting remarks will not be allowed. The hearing officer may ask questions for clarification. DEQ staff will be available after the meeting to address questions. Again, we ask that you respect the right of others to present their comments without interruption. I will call persons who have indicated they wish to speak to the podium one at a time based off the order of registration. To assure our records are complete, please indicate clearly your name and any group you might be representing. So the first three speakers are David White, Greg Weaver, and Terry Marshall.
Thank you, good evening. My name is David White. I live at 320 Pennsylvania Avenue in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I also serve on the Yadkin Riverkeeper Board of Directors and have done so for nearly 3 years. I am a conservationist. I believe in the careful management of our natural resources in partnership with and cooperation with government and the companies who reside here and provide jobs for our citizens. However, when I see neglect or lack of action which may result in the harm to our environment, I believe it's my responsibility to speak up. The population of North Carolina is about 10 million, And we have nearly 10 million hogs in state, or one hog for every man, woman, and child. We have more hogs in North Carolina than the entire population of New York City. On an annual basis, these hogs produce 9.5 billion, that's billion, gallons of waste or hog sewage. That's an overwhelming number, one which many of us can't truly appreciate. So put another way, if each gallon of hog waste was 1 second in time, 9.5 billion seconds equals 285 years, which from today would put us back in 1734. That is a lot of hog waste. Why wouldn't we want to put into place simple monitoring tools to make certain our groundwater is not being contaminated by hog sewage? We certainly would do that if we were talking about human waste. It's just common sense. If there is not adequate openness on how swine waste is being monitored, then we need to put into place the appropriate oversight to address it. It's just common sense. I'm not suggesting we need to overregulate the industry or implement unnecessary restrictions. I am advocating for increased transparency and availability of records from the industry and basic groundwater monitoring. It's proper and appropriate given the amount of sewage caused by hogs. In my opinion, we simply can't sit and wait back until we discover another groundwater contamination disaster, like the one caused by the coal ash ponds at the Duke Buck Steam Station near Salisbury. We need to act now. Thank you.
Greg Weaver.
Good evening. My name is Greg Weaver, and I live in Dade County next door. And I've been a long-term volunteer with the Aiken River Keeper organization in this area. I've helped shepherd a few hundred paddlers down the river all the way from up above Perscott Lake to down to High Rock and below. Spent a lot of time on the river here and others. I paddled Suwannee River in Florida, the Satilla River in Georgia, the Hoopy River, which is a tiny little river in Georgia, and also the Lumber, Little PD, and Black Rivers here in North Carolina and a little bit in South Carolina. Those are beautiful black water protected rivers, and I was paddling on those last month out of Nichols and Marion, South Carolina, right down in that area, and I've talked to people there who are paddlers, and they're just appalled at what happened during Hurricane Florence. I was working with Habitat in Nichols, South Carolina, which is now basically a ghost town, which is between the Lumber and the Little PD rivers, and it's been flooded twice in 2.5 years with Florence and Hurricane Michael. Worked in houses that were under 3 feet of water, and I'm standing there thinking these people had what I will call poop and pee pollution from hogs, because that's ground central for hogs down there. And with that in mind, you know, I'm not anti-ag. I'm going to use an oxymoron. I'm pro-anti-pollution. And you can't control or mitigate pollution damages unless you take action to do so. And pollution's going to happen. That's 100% guarantee. There's 2 floods in 2 years to show that. And I take a risk management view of the world. I'm an ocean engineer. It's my background. I'm a project manager. Part of my world is risk management planning. And without making this class in that, basically, if you have a risk like pollution, and it's high probability and high impact, there's nothing to do but prevent. You don't think about it. You don't ignore it. You don't debate forever the science involved, because there is science that should be depended on in this, that you have to prevent the pollution. And that's not 100% guaranteed you can do that, but you can't afford things to be 100% preventable. But I think that it's worth expecting big ag, not the individual ag producers, but those that are contracting for all these, you know, swine to be produced, that they ought to pay some, you know, they ought to pay a little bit of profit into the kitty to mitigate pollution and make it to where farmers can control the waste in an appropriate manner. And I'm not the scientist, I'm not the person that knows that. I depend on y'all and the Yakima River Keeper and professional organizations for farmers and so on. to deal with these things in a responsible manner so I can paddle down these rivers and not worry if I fall in the water and I die from some kind of E. coli or something that's coming from 100 yards off the river. Well, a quarter of a mile off the river. So do something, make it responsible in cooperation with our producers and make pollution the target and not recreation or environmentalists or the producers. They're not the problem, the pollution is the problem. Thank you.
Next up is Terry Marshall and then Jimmy Gentry and Edgar Miller.
Good evening. My name is Terry Marshall. I live in Katy, North Carolina, and first of all, I'd like to thank you all for the open programs to hear from the public about this very important subject. I am a supporter of the Yadkin Riverkeeper. I spend time on the water when I can, kayaking. I think the river system is so important to this state. We want water that's clean enough to utilize. We want to swim in it without being worried about catching some disease. And if we can get it clean enough, it will drop a lot of costs for refining this water, treating this water for consumption. There will be a cost savings there. And everybody benefits from it. We've got a problem with the animal feeding situations. I myself have been caught up, unfortunately, with an animal feeding situation which eventually drove me from my home. So I kind of got a first-hand experience on what it's like to live inside one of these facilities. I understand what it's like to see the dust in the air from them, to smell the smell from them, and to see the way they spread the overload of manure. Okay? My experience is with chicken, okay, folks, dry litter, and I know we're talking about wet tonight, but I believe the two are joined at the hip. The biggest problem in both situations are too many animals, too small of a location, too much waste, and not an efficient way to treat that waste or get rid of it. The system we have is not working. It's overloaded, okay? We need what you're proposing here, no doubt about it. We need to know what is happening in the soil. We need to have our facts and figures straight. This will help. I don't think it's gone far enough, okay? But it's a step in the right direction. I'm all in favor of this. But we need to keep our eye on the ball and keep an eye on the pollution in the water, in the rivers, and all around these facilities. And so we can make steps to mitigate it the best we can. Thank you.
Jimmy Gentry.
Good evening. I'm Jimmy Gentry. I'm president of the North Carolina State Grange Organization. The Grange has been advocating for agriculture in North Carolina since 1929. We're concerned about provisions that have been drafted for the general waste permit. I want to state clearly up front that the NC Grange opposes the proposed amendments. We believe that no changes are needed from the current permit. The proposed changes do little to further protect the environment. They seem designed simply to add new paperwork for the farmer. These are expensive requirements, and for operations that have been, especially for operations that have been compliant. There's no indication of how information derived from these requirements will be utilized or how it will benefit the state's ability to protect and improve water quality. The requirement to run PLAT, P-L-A-T, if not only unnecessary, it's contrary to clear legislative directive and statute, as well as the policies of the Environmental Management Commission. Both identify nitrogen as a nutrient for determining application rates. There's also no consideration of the enormous workload such a requirement would place on staff of involved agencies to conduct this evaluation for all livestock operations. The proposal to require farmers to install new irrigation equipment to prevent violations due to wind drift is unnecessary. It's already illegal to apply waste outside designated land application areas. These proposed changes require significant investments, unprecedented monitoring and record keeping. To alter a permitting process, it's already sound. There's been no indication that the current permits fail to protect water quality, nor have there been widespread non-compliance by the farming community. We would argue that a reasonable amount of regulation is necessary. We would also argue that unnecessary regulation can be expensive and burdensome. On behalf of the North Carolina Grange, I ask you to closely evaluate these proposed changes and reject them. Go back to the permit that's worked successfully for the past 5 years and keep it in place. We will also provide more detailed written comments. Thank you so much.
Next up is Edgar Miller.
Thank you. I'm Edgar Miller. I'm the Executive Director of the Yadkin Riverkeeper, based in Winston-Salem. We are a membership organization whose mission is to respect, protect, and enhance the Yadkin River through education, advocacy, and action. I'm here tonight along with several of our board members and members representing our 300 members throughout the watershed. We want to see common sense safeguards put in place to protect water quality in the river from the risks posed by large-scale concentrated animal feeding operations. And I would just remind everyone that the Yadkin River provides drinking water to more than a million residents in the Piedmont and Northwest Piedmont region. We are not, as several have noted, an anti-farming organization. We value the hardworking farm families that put food on our table, and we understand and know that we share their goal to protect water and land resources. Unfortunately, we find ourselves in a situation tonight where we are taking a strong position in support of the new permitting requirements for these facilities. We want to work with the agricultural community to address these concerns, and we're not singling them out. We have fought energy companies to remove coal ash. We have sued municipalities who ignore stormwater or sewage overflows, and we've worked with NCDOT to address concerns from road construction. So we're just at a point where we have to acknowledge the inadequacy, in our opinion, of animal waste technologies to protect our environment. We understand the general permit does prohibit the discharge of pollution to the state waterways, but we know the potential for these discharges exists, and riverkeepers across the state have documented that. And we certainly understand that the large majority of farmers are in compliance with the current regulations, but inevitably there will be bad actors, accidents, and violation. In fact, DEQ's most recent enforcement report found about 7% of annual inspections have identified some type of violation. So the current technology that we have has been considered inadequate for some time. 20 years ago, the General Assembly passed a moratorium to no longer allow those facilities, and that's a long time, and we need to do better. So we are here tonight to thank you all for putting forward those requirements. We support those that increase accountability, that will improve transparency, ensure equity, and enhance technology, because this industry is growing rapidly, and we need to protect our waterways from becoming overloaded with excess nutrients, harmful bacteria, and algae blooms. Our riverkeeper, Brian Fannin, will talk more to the specifics, and we will also provide written comments, but we appreciate you being here, and we hope this information will be used to help us ensure that we are protecting water quality and public health, and giving farmers and producers the certainty that they need to make a living. Thank you.
Thanks. Next up is Richard Rolinger, followed by Mike Adams and Brian Fannin.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. In other words, I want to ask a couple things, and I won't take much of your time. I'm Richard Rolinger. It says, have you ever been hungry? Think about that. Have you ever been hungry? The ag industry in North Carolina, along with the rest of the United States, is in a little bit of jeopardy. This didn't happen overnight, but it's in a little bit of jeopardy. Please, I share the comments with these folks that have been before me, because I heard common sense three or four times mentioned. Common sense. Use that as you go forward with this process. Remember, have you ever been hungry? Because we are at jeopardy at this point in time. The farmers I know are struggling. Many things due to the floods. These regulations and stuff you're putting in place can put them in more jeopardy if they're not needed. If we've got a problem, let's try to fix it with common sense. These regulations that go into effect will be in effect from Murphy to Mango. One size doesn't fit all. Pay attention. Agriculture in North Carolina is the largest industry. Pay attention. Have you ever been hungry? Use common sense. Thank you for the time.
Mike Adams.
I defer my right to speak.
We have Brian Fannin, followed by Keith Lair and Robert Floyd.
Good evening, I'm Ryan Fannin, Yadkin Riverkeeper. We appreciate the opportunity that you provided us to come speak this evening. Yadkin Riverkeeper is a nonprofit organization whose main goal and work focuses on being for clean water. And I'd like to emphasize that our mission is for clean water. We are not against anyone, anything, any industry. Our goal boils down to that one point. That, of course, puts us in conflict occasionally with other agencies, with other operations, with other groups, industries, municipalities, and sometimes farms. We have pursued, as Edgar mentioned earlier, legal action against both industry and municipalities. So those are just part of the duties that we take out. But in bringing up those, I would like to point out that in the situation of many industries and all municipalities, when we work with those, either way, we have a clear set of records that are available to us, that are publicly available for everyone to see what's going on. Everything is above board. We have regular monitoring of those. In the case of municipalities, we have extensive records. We can see what's happened. We can work with them to help fix these problems in the future. All of these can be threats, but with information available, we can figure out how to deal with these threats to everyone's benefit. And for that reason, we strongly support the amendments that would encourage groundwater monitoring and also transparency of records. When we look to the farms, and I grew up on a cattle and tobacco farm. I was a farmer for the first 18 years of my life. We want to say, we know that farms are very important. They have a long, solid past in our state's history. But if we condense that down and look on a short-term basis, it really gives us a better picture. A human being, an adult human, can make it about 2 weeks without food and about 3 days without water. And to prioritize food, production, and profit over clean water is a very poor plan for North Carolina's future. Additionally, we believe that technology may help us. The moratorium was placed over 20 years ago while we had time to solve the problem. We've not yet solved it. But in those 20 years, I've gone from carrying a bag phone in my car, if you remember those, to a tiny little cell phone that can do as much as NASA's computers did when we put a man on the moon. So let's move forward. Let's have monitoring. Let's have the investment in technology, and let's have transparency. Thank you very much.
Keith Lair.
Good evening. My name is Keith Lair with North Carolina Farm Bureau. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. Last week I addressed primarily the swine permit. Tonight my comments will primarily deal with the dairy permit. First topic is about the dairy industry in general. You'll probably hear more tonight about how the industry just can't afford the additional requirements and costs right now. And this isn't just empty rhetoric. When we were here in 2014, there were 251 grade A dairies in the state. Today there are 158. That's a 37% reduction over the past 5 years. A lot of the changes that are in the proposed dairy permit are really the direct result of comments made about the swine permit. And we feel like a lot of these changes are not necessary or relevant for the dairy permit. DEQ has different permits for swine, cattle, and wet poultry for a reason, because it's recognized that these are different farming operations. So we feel like DEQ can and should maintain these distinctions and try to keep this permit as close as possible to the 2014 permit. I'd like to reiterate our opposition to condition 1.8, which would require the plat analysis for fields over a certain phosphorus index on the soil test. Continue to believe that there's a lack of statutory authority for that condition. If the condition does remain in the permit, DEQ should extend that window to run that test beyond 12 months and maybe use the model from the 2004 NPDES permit process where there was a phased-in approach. In addition, farms would need time to incorporate any needed changes into their waste management plan. Condition 311 is the one that requires groundwater monitoring for farms that have a storage pond in the 100-year floodplain. Talking with NCDA, it appears that there are no dairies in the state that have a storage pond in the 100-year floodplain. Conditions in this draft would also prohibit new construction of storage ponds in the 100-year floodplain. We feel like this is just unnecessary as a result of that, so you can confirm that with the Department of Ag and hopefully pull that out. The annual reporting requirement, we feel like this will create a burden for many farmers just due to the time it's going to take to complete that form. A lot of dairies, especially in this area, have smaller fields and more of them, and it's just going to be a lot more time to get this form complete. All this information is available during the inspection, so we feel like this form is just unnecessary and redundant, and we ask for it to be pulled out of the permit. Sum up, we feel like these conditions are unnecessary, add additional time and financial burden to farmers when they can least afford it, and we hope that you will keep this permit as close to the 2014 permit as you can. Thank you.
Thanks. Robert Freud, Jack O'Connor, and David Caldwell.
My name is Robert Freud. I'm a science teacher of 25 years. I teach everything from physics to environmental science. Somebody asked me to come here and speak today. I don't know who it was, but I do definitely have a pitch. I have a dairy farmer as a neighbor. I've grown up with them. I respect them. I love them. Also, I respect their way of life. Also, I teach my students that water is life's essence. I talk to them about the three primary pollutants to our waterways, excess nutrients being one. To me, I don't see a need to sit here and increase burden on a dairy farmer, or any farmer for that fact. They are doing what they need to do to provide a resource for our society. They're providing a resource that we demand. Instead, I'm just asking our state to do a forward thought. Why do we not use all this effluent waste that's creating the eutrophication in our waterways? Why don't we take that and generate electricity with it? Why are we not thinking that way, such that we could do something like generate facilities in Northern Arrow County, Southern Arrow County, across the state, and if you have farmers that have excess nutrients that are making it to the waterways because you do have eutrophication in the groundwater already. Again, I'll repeat that, you do have eutrophication in the groundwater. And so therefore, if we cannot support these farmers by saying, bring your excess nutrients to us, bring that effluent waste here, let's generate electricity and even give the farmers an energy credit of some sort. Right now we're debating over trying to increase the monitoring of a farmer. Why are we not thinking as a state? Because the demand, as another gentleman said earlier, will increase as years go on. Why do we not take a look at a certain way of trying to take this waste that used to be called a resource? Now it's no longer a resource, it is a waste that's causing excess problems in our waterway. Thank you.
Jack O'Connor, followed by David Caldwell and Roxanne Newton.
Well, thank you again for giving us a chance to talk about this. I'm Jack O'Connor again, and I'm a retired teacher. I'm a retired teacher. I live in a rural area. I drive past the chicken house every day, in and out of my driveway. My neighbors are all wonderful people. You know, I come from a farm family, big tobacco fields in eastern North Carolina. But what I'm seeing now with the new development, the new chicken houses, it's not one. There are like four, five of them together. And often, right down the road, there's another farmer that's also putting in two or three. And I was just curious if y'all are thinking about not just the population density, the number of people who live within the area that these large operations are located, but how many of those places will be allowed in, say, in one county. Right now, I live right on the county line of Alexander and Iredell, and there are a whole lot of them, brand new's going in Alexander County, and they're just packing them in. And this is right near the headwaters of the South Yadkin River. And of course, I'm a better safe than sorry type of person. You know, let's take the precautions initially so that we don't have accidents down the road. I'm not anti-farming. I've got chickens and goats myself. I love being around livestock. So, but when we're talking about hundreds and thousands of animals, it just changes the scenario. But anyway, thanks a lot.
David Caldwell, Mark Sandut, and Ben Schultz.
I'm David Caldwell with the Broad River Alliance. We are a waterkeeper affiliate program working to protect and promote waters in the Broad River Basin. And although we don't have any industrial swine operations in our watershed, animal agriculture is big business, and especially poultry. In the last 10 years, industrial poultry facilities grew by more than 50% in Cleveland County. And that's where I live, and farming is traditional. And I know a lot of farmers, I respect them, and it's not the farmers that are the problem, it's the waste produced on their farms. And there's not been a good way to handle the waste. The changes that you're making here are an effort to improve that, and I appreciate that. So I want to support your proposed changes to the swine permit in hopes that it'll lay the groundwork for better waste management practices in the poultry industry as well. In addition, I'd like to ask DEQ to go even further and require submission of waste management records showing where, when, and how much manure is spread onto pasture and croplands, and make these records available to the public. I thank DEQ for proposing the use of PLAT, phosphorus load assessment tool, to evaluate the risk of phosphorus pollution. And I think DEQ should consider requiring all deemed permitted farms and manure haulers to use this tool as well. Also advocate for future monitoring of bacteria levels in streams around animal feeding operations. Thank you for your help in helping us take care of water and our people.
Roxanne Newton, Ben Sheldon, and Eddie Johnson.
Good evening, I'm Roxanne Newton. I'm a lifelong resident of Iredell County, and I live near the Catawba River in Iredell County, and know that everyone involved is trying to make things better. Agriculture is important. I have family farms in my background and support our farmers and agriculture industry, but at the same time, I'm very concerned about environmental quality, about the pollution that disproportionately affects people of color and poor communities in the eastern part of our state, as we've seen with our major storms that we've had in the past couple of years. We had effects here in the Piedmont, but those effects just intensified as everything ran down east, and the challenges for those poorer communities, I think, are just increased by pollution and the possibility for that pollution. I think it's important to have recreation and to have clean water and a clean environment so that we can preserve our beautiful state. But I also think we need to think about the people as well as the wildlife and the environment. And I really strongly support what DEQ's doing with the changes in the permits. If there could be any way that the state could give support to farmers, maybe smaller farmers have some sort of subsidy, if this is a challenge and an economic challenge for those smaller farmers, I want to be very supportive of that. But if there would be some way that we could assist them at the same time. So thank you.
Thanks. Ben Shelton, Mary Johnson. Jim Howard.
I'm Ben Shelton. I'm a veterinarian here in this county. Been here about 27 years now. Primarily dairy practice. Also have my own dairy farm, so I'm actually a CAFO operator. Hope you don't get shot for that or whatever, but I am one. I know a lot of people here on a non-profit. I am actually trying to run it as a profit business. The bank appreciates that. So I've heard a lot of things, but I guess when this whole process started 20 or so years ago with permitting and nutrient management and agronomic principles, my question really is, did we assess what was the water quality at that point and what is the water quality today? If we reduce loads of nitrogen, phosphorus, bacteria in the water, if we have not, we're going in the wrong direction. I see that actions need to be taken. If we have held status quo and that's not acceptable water quality, I would see that we need to do something. If we've improved, you know, and I don't know if we know that or not, then I would say that we do need to take action. When I can't speak to the swine industry because I'm not in Eastern North Carolina to know about the swine industry. I know in this area, over the last 20 years, great reduction in tillage, increase in cover crops, better maintenance of waterways, increased production from crops through genetics and better management practices to take more nutrients out of the soil. So I guess that would be really my question. Is there a need to go to this level? And do we know that what the water quality is? So thank you for that.
Dave Johnson.
I'm Ed Johnson, Sarah County. I am a farmer, and I have all three of these species listed up here. We have enough bookworm to do without adding additional bookworm. I think that the water quality in Sarah County is much better than it was before these regulations started. And for our part, as far as animals and animal waste, I'm a farmer, and I like to utilize all the waste that comes from these animals. And the farm we operate on, we do not have near enough waste, nutrient-wise, to apply to the crops that we grow. So we could use a lot more. But in addition to that, in saying that, we are governed by the rules and regulations. These rules and regulations have been at an optimum in the past. So I really don't see the need to change a lot of things that has been implemented or proposed. So therefore, I'm saying that we need to use the common sense method and go from there. Thanks.
Thanks. Jim Howey, followed by Will Hendrick and Krista Brooke.
Good evening. I'm Jim Howey from Waxhaw, North Carolina. I'm a cattle farmer.
I'm also the manager of member services for Maryland Virginia Milk Producers Cooperative, or Milk Marketing Cooperative. We market milk for dairy farmers up and down the East Coast and for 36 farmers here in North Carolina. Each of them make their living with clean water, clean air, and good soil. It's very important to them. These North Carolina farmers produced over 144 million pounds of milk in 2018 at a value of $24.8 million. This equated to almost $100 million in economic activity to the North Carolina economy. I'm here to express my concerns and the concerns of our North Carolina members about the additional requirements proposed by DEQ's draft general permit for dairy and cattle operations. DEQ already has the most stringent regulatory program in the nation, and additional permit conditions are not needed. Many of these changes to this cattle proposed dairy and cattle permit are because of conditions that are not relevant to the dairy and cattle operations. The 2019 dairy and cattle permit language should closely resemble the 2014 permit. There are not issues with the language or the regulations in the 2014 permit. Historically, DEQ has intentionally made different permits for cattle, swine, and wet waste poultry operations because it is recognized that these farming operations are different. DEQ should continue to maintain these distinctions when adopting these new permits. I must question if the proposed additions of groundwater monitoring, phosphorus land application rates, additional annual reports, lagoon marker surveys, equipment changes, and burdensome additional record keeping would protect water quality. The thing that they will do is add several thousand dollars of additional annual operating costs to dairy and cattle farms with no opportunity to collect these funds from the marketplace. I have a few comments on the specifics of the proposed rule changes. Number one, I do not believe DEQ has the statutory authority to require phosphorus loss assessment to plat, even in the case of high soil phosphorus. Both in the general statute and 2T state rules state that nitrogen is the rate determining element for farms under a state general permit. DEQ has not stated any specific basis for requiring groundwater monitoring at farms that are in a floodplain or what risk will be evaluated using this information. This and any additional requirement must be based on scientific need. The annual reporting requirement, the additional annual reporting requirement is unnecessary and redundant as the same information can be gained during the annual transparent DEQ inspection of every permitted animal waste operation in North Carolina. Required submittal of this information is just additional unnecessary paperwork. Condition 2.20 of the new proposal would allow DWR to require a farmer to install new irrigation equipment that would reduce drift potential due to violations. It is already a violation to apply waste outside the land application area. It is also a violation to cause waste to cross property boundaries and or enter surface waters. This new requirement is not needed. I urge you to abide by the general statutes and current rulings. These proposed rule changes with respect to dairy and cattle operations are out of the scope of both. They are unnecessary and burdensome on an industry that is in the midst of one of the worst economic crises in history. Thank you for the opportunity to address.
Will Hendrick, followed by Christopher Early and Jovita Lee.
Good evening. My name is Will Hendrick. I'm a staff attorney for Waterkeeper Alliance, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you tonight. I also sincerely believe that all North Carolinians want and deserve clean water. I believe that's true no matter what you do for a living, no matter where you live, no matter who you are. And I'm proud to work with river keepers across the state to combat threats to water quality. I'm also appreciative of the efforts that the Department of Environmental Quality puts forth to protect water quality for all North Carolinians. Now, there are many threats to water quality that the agency and the river keepers combat. One of the very first cases I brought when I was a young lawyer was dealing with sewage overflows from a municipal collection system. As has been alluded to, Riverkeepers have fought various pollution sources. We're here today to talk about one potential such source, and that is sewage, that is untreated waste, that is animal manure, that harms our rivers, lakes, and streams when it's discharged. And that's why this is a non-discharge permit, and it's important that it be implemented as such. I sympathize with the producers here tonight, and they were in Kingsville last week, who are concerned about the record-keeping burden. However, I also believe that transparency is important in a process, and transparency is the way to prevent the facts from being misstated. It's only when the truth is hidden that it's subject to interpretation. And all of those records that are produced on a daily basis by all of those producers stay on site. And yes, they can be reviewed during those annual inspections. And a good inspection would be, what, 2 to 4 hours, it'll be testimony recently stated. But too often, inspections are 30 to 45 minutes. In the region with the most permitted operations, they average under an hour. And that's the result of limitations that the DEQ is encountering. I don't think it's y'all's intention or your fault that you have fewer funds. But I do think that when an annual report could provide information that has heretofore never been publicly available, that transparency is valuable. And that if you've got no problems, then you've got nothing to hide. I also want to speak to the monitoring requirements. I think it is prudent to tie them to the relative risk. I want to acknowledge, as many speakers have this evening, that the risk posed by the swine industry is not the same as that posed by the dairy industry. The swine industry is concentrated in the coastal plain. It's also concentrated in communities of color. And those are risks that should be treated differently than those posed by industries that don't pose them. But I want to also say to those who are questioning whether or not the permit has worked, that the only way to know is to check. And that groundwater monitoring will help to evaluate whether or not groundwater resources are being contaminated. The PLAT tool, which is designed to evaluate the risks of phosphorus export in walls, can only be used to evaluate that risk and mitigate if it's run. You don't know what problems exist until you look. And so I appreciate the proposed changes in the permit that will improve the transparency and the accountability of permitted operations. Thank you.
Chris Early, followed by Jamil Lee and Jeff.
Hello, my name is Krista Early, and I'm the Clean Water Advocate for Environment North Carolina. Today I'm speaking on behalf of Environment North Carolina, our more than 200,000 supporters across the state, and also on behalf of our sister organization, the North Carolina Public Interest Research Group, and their 95,000 supporters across the state. As we know, North Carolina is the country's second biggest producer of hogs. We strongly believe that farming operations can run efficiently and profitably without severely impacting public health and our fragile ecosystems. However, adequate permitting processes are necessary to ensure that that happens. This industry should not be allowed to use their significant influence on our state to defeat common sense regulations that ensure environmental protections, public safety, transparency, equity, and accountability. As we recently saw during Hurricanes Michael and Florence, massive meat processing operations and Hurricanes Don't Mix. Because of Hurricane Florence, at least 110 lagoons in the state either released waste into our environment or were at imminent risk of doing so. These storms resulted in contamination of our waterways, which caused huge problems for our ecosystems and public health, problems like algal blooms, mass fish die-offs, and blue baby syndrome. The permitting process is one of the few tools the public has to ensure these major operations don't become major threats to their health and environment during severe weather incidents. It's also one of the only protections available to neighbors that suffer injury from living near these hog and poultry operations. North Carolina residents living near large swine operations have elevated risk of disease and death as documented by peer-reviewed research published in the North Carolina Medical Journal. We also know that industrial hog operations are disproportionately located near low-wealth communities of color. Despite this, most hog operations still use a primitive waste management system. We've been calling on the DEQ to update and strengthen outdated standards for animal feeding operations, and we're glad to see that DEQ has proposed some changes to these permits that are long overdue and necessary. These changes to the draft permit include some positive steps, but there's still a long way to go before it equitably and adequately safeguards our environment and health. We want to thank DEQ for holding this hearing today and allowing us to make our concerns heard on this issue that is so important to the health and well-being of our state. We look forward to submitting more in-depth comments to help the agency fulfill their responsibility of protecting our air, water, and public health for all of North Carolina's citizens. Thank you.
Can we leave?
Good evening. My name's Jeff McNeely. I run GNM Milling. We're a feed mill here in the county, been here since 1957. I'm also one of your county commissioners in Iron County. Also, I own a dairy farm. Not got any cows on right now because nobody can make any money. I'm going to turn around and talk to y'all. You can hear me.
No, you
can,
sir.
Talk to you. Okay. I can talk to everybody. That's okay. I have a beginning on it. I inherited it when I bought the farm. And I didn't realize how stringent the requirements were until I possessed one. I don't think a lot of people in here understand how stringent the requirements are until they possess one. I do a lot of record keeping at my business. Unfortunately, DEQ monitors my stormwater runoff from my feed mill too. But nothing like I've had to do with the reporting bombing on the goon. Putting more regulations, more requirements on farmers is one of the reasons why my farm is set vacant and I can't find anybody to come milk cows at it or rent it, or rent some of the cropland. The lagoon's still there. My inspector will tell you, it's mostly rainwater. Right now, there's a bunch of rainwater. We're trying to close it. We've had difficulties to be able to close it for the last 6 months because of the record rainfall we've received in this state. Some of it was from hurricanes. Some of it just God's giving us plenty right now. Probably turn it off later. I don't feel there's a need for any more regulations to be put, especially on cattle. We're never going to hit the phosphorus level. I work nutrition work for dairy cattle every day. The third element that goes out as far as a mineral in milk is phosphorus. So you're never going to hit that here. So why put that burden on people with cattle if you're trying to really regulate people with hogs? There's probably not 1,000 hogs within 150 to 200 miles of here if you lump them all together. But we try to sell hog feed also, and we don't sell hardly any at all. Some backyards, maybe. You got a few. The Renegers have some. I got some other boys that have some up in Alexander County, but they're very small in comparison. What I really like to say is, being a county commissioner has opened my eyes to a lot of things. And one of the things I feel like it's opened my eyes to is the Department of Environmental Quality. Because we have a coal ash pond that's unlined, that sits next to one of the largest man-made lakes in the world, if not North Carolina, for sure. And it's really not been monitored very well at all. And now we have an issue with thyroid cancer, which is documented. I don't know about the documentations of people down east that are getting sick because they're near hogs. That may be true. It may just be they have other problems going on besides the hog waste. But I do know we have a problem with thyroid cancer, and we're having a lot of pushback from DEQ and our North Carolina Department of Health to help us determine what's causing this and our high levels of minerals we have. Most of them are kind of carcinogenic minerals that are in our water table in this area. But that doesn't seem to be as big a concern to them as people trying to make a living on very limited resources in the eastern part of our state or in the whole state with agriculture. And I have a real problem with that. I have an extremely real problem with that. If there was 1 gallon of cow poop or hog poop in that coal ash pond down there, we'd have either done have the daggum thing cleaned up, hauled off, or monitored daily, like we have to do with rainfall and everything else that happens in our lagoons. At one time in the 90s, up until they got up to place, the town of Davison didn't have enough waste facility to handle more than 30 days of waste in a row. Some months have 31. You figure, they dumped in the lake, raw sewage, and they paid the fine. There's no way you'd let a dairy farmer or a hog farmer do that and just pay the fine to keep dumping. you're going to shut it down. So explain me where the logic is in this from the DEQ to put more regulations on a farmer. We don't look at golf courses where they run off. We don't look at municipal parks that where there's runoff from all kinds of chemicals we apply. But yet we are bound and determined people that are trying to make a living. We're going to put a burden on them. Every day our freedoms get taken from us, one by one. This is a freedom that's getting ready to get taken from us again. I'm tired of it.
Trevilli, is that not speaking now?
Who was it? Say it again.
Trevilli, she's on.
I'm Javita Lee, and I represent Sanford Biological Diversity. So the talking points that I have for tonight, I would like to address community health. The vast majority of permitted swine operations are in the coastal plain, where high water tables are aging, aging lagoons infrastructure can bring groundwater in contact with industrial animal waste generated on these operations. We roughly have the census blocks with the highest density of swine operations, 85% of neighbors depend on wells for drinking water supply. As far as accountability, DEQ proposes a new groundwater monitoring requirement in Condition 311 that would apply to facilities with lagoons and waste storage structures located in the 100-year floodplain. We appreciate the agency's willingness to exercise its authority to require groundwater monitoring and reporting to evaluate impacts to water resources. We generally support this proposal and the subsequent provisions and conditions 312 through 14. Addressing the implementation of this monitoring requirement as a step in the right direction. However, decades-old sitting decisions are not the only actions of the swine industry that threaten groundwater resources. Moreover, impacts to groundwater sources cannot be fully determined if samples are not adequately analyzed for additional constituents demonstrating the presence of swine waste. We therefore encourage DEQ to take steps discussed below to improve the scope and utility of groundwater monitoring under the general permit. At a minimum, monitoring should additionally be required whenever facility construction and operation decisions heighten risk to groundwater resources, and DEQ should require groundwater monitoring upon receipt of evidence suggesting groundwater pollution at or near a specific facility. Finally, in conducting groundwater monitoring, proper well construction, sample analysis, and documentation are critical. DEQ is responsible for conducting a meaningful and substantial review of this permitting program and the comments made by all stakeholders in the stakeholder process. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Amanda Strutman, Chris Craig Fraser, and Doug Eagle.
Hi, I'm Amanda Strutman with Clean Water from North Carolina. We are an organization that helps communities deal with drinking water contamination issues, as well as environmental justice issues. And to that effect, I'd like to comment that DEQ is in the process of creating a community mapping tool to analyze impacts to communities near polluting facilities. For years, neighbors of animal operations have called for such an investigation, and I believe that the five-year permit and the date that the permit will become effective doesn't allow for the mapping tool to provide vital information regarding the disproportionate impact to communities. So one suggestion that I had was to either have some sort of interim permit to allow for this investigation or to shorten the permit to 2 years. As for dealing with drinking water, we question the application of animal waste is close to 100 feet within a drinking well, as it really allows no room for error in adequately controlling the releases from a mechanized application. It also doesn't provide enough of a buffer in case of large storms that would move the waste closer to these drinking wells.
2018 saw historic rainfall records in North Carolina, and all protections regarding storm impacts to animal operations should be considered more carefully. In addition, in regard to the movement of animal waste toward waterways and regulations involving animal mortality, which we feel need to be more stringent. So I'd like to echo the support that I've heard tonight for the groundwater monitoring and the increased transparency. As of right now, there's too little oversight, too much reliance on self-reporting of violation with too few inspectors, and short inspections for CAFOs across the state. So we can't really solely rely on these annual inspections to provide all of the information that we need. I also support the suggestion of that we heard tonight of the addition of bacteria and total coliform testing in drinking water sources near CAFO operations, as well as supporting the suggestion to find ways to help small operators deal financially with the increased regulations.
Craig Frazier.
I got several notes, but I may not stick too much of them. My name's Craig Frazier. I'm from Randolph County. A lot of you in this room know me. I am the chairman of the Randolph Soil and Water Conservation District Board, an agency that's been working on soil and water improvement since 1939. For y'all that wasn't around then, I wasn't either. But that organization's been around that long, addressing soil and water, long before DENR ever became an issue. We work daily with farms to try to meet all these requirements and general best management practices that aren't even regulated. We never have enough funding to do that. Ag cost share, call your legislators, tell them to fund the ag cost share program. It was funded at $12 million right after O200 became law to try to get farms in compliance. Now it's less than $4 million a year to try to meet these requirements. Call them, please. My wife's sitting back here with me. She come with me tonight. She's the eighth generation on a dairy farm we run in Randolph County. We are the north side. When I say we are the north side, we are the whole north side of the city of Lake Lucas, the city drinking water for Ashburn. The dairy was there before the lake was built in 1946. They took property from my wife's grandfather to build the lake on. That was a WS2 water supply watershed up until 0200. That dairy was there. Every bit of the wastewater from that dairy ran straight down a ditch into that lake, unfiltered, untreated, and that was a WS2 water supply watershed. But suddenly we have a major problem with water quality. I think, look behind you, it comes out every time you sit down to use it. It's humans. We pollute the planet. We need to straighten up what we do. I've heard too many speeches tonight about farmers polluting the planet when it's humans. You said we go unregulated. We are heavily regulated. The dairy industry is the most regulated food supply in the world. Bar none, we are heavily regulated. Municipalities spread human sludge on farm property to get rid of your waste. And it's heavy in metals. They have to move around constantly to keep from overloading that soil with heavy metals because they have nowhere to go. But we keep generating every single day. Think about it when you go to the restroom. We are polluting the planet. Now, as far as the financial system, I want to say right off, I agree with everything Keith Laird said. Put that in my comments. I agree with everything Jim Howard said. I can't have time to repeat all those. From the financial side, dairy farmers are broke. In 2017, my wife and I had to cancel our health insurance, January 17, because we could no longer afford it. I'm in partnership with her uncle on our dairy farm. We built 270-300 cows. We have not received a salary check in the past 18 months. Can y'all go out and get paid? And you want us to spend more money to feed you? I'm sorry. We're going to have to quit. Up until recently, there used to be five dairy farms on the creek that fed Lake Lucas. Now there's two. One of those is going to be gone in the next 2 months. We may be right behind it because we can't afford to exist. But nobody cares. Everybody wants to eat. Nobody cares how to make it. We have to have a non-biased, realistic way to address waste. Mortality is a huge issue with all animal organizations, all animal species. There is funding, some cost share funding through the Ag Cost Share and through EQIP and RCS to put in mortality management systems. Burying is going to be ruled out by the poultry industry. They're going to composting. It is a better way to handle mortalities. We support it 100%. But it takes funding to make that happen. Farmers can't afford it. Dairies cannot compost because of the mad cow disease. The state veterinary will not approve it. We either have to bury animals or you have to render them. No one wants to render them because of mad cow disease. So you're left with one option. Bury them. There's nothing else to do with those animals. Think about it when you're trying to make regulations, what the options are. There's very few. They're far between. Now, back to the issue with the plat. Somebody mentioned plat earlier. I sat on the Soil and Water Commission for 9 years in this state. I'm in my 25th year in Soil and Water. For 9 years. While I was on Soil and Water, it's when plat was adopted for the state of North Carolina. I highly resisted plat then because it's not scientifically based. I had 16 people on my farm in a 12 by 12 office, which is way more crowded than our confined animal operations are, to address plat. On our farm, we ran test sites. We quadruple applied the amount of nitrogen that is allowed under the 0200 CAWMP plants. At 16-inch depth, because we're in clay soil in Randolph County, at 16-inch depth, there was zero detectable nitrogen. It's not a permeability problem. Nitrogen or phosphorus in Piedmont, North Carolina, or Western North Carolina. In the sand, it's a different issue. We should have different requirements. Wells, you have a different infiltration for wells in Eastern North Carolina than you do in Western North Carolina. It's soil type. But we adopt rules that apply all the way across this state, which is ridiculous. Because they do not apply equally. Plat, when you run it on a farm, it is based off of soil slope and soil length. That is what the plat phosphorus loss assessment tool is all about. In Eastern North Carolina, you can measure a slope. You can measure the length of the slope because it basically all drains in one direction at a constant grade. When you get to the Piedmont Mountain, North Carolina, you cannot measure property with plat. I argued that point, and I argued that point, because they said, well, here's how we'll do it. And then we adopted it, because it was a 5-member board, a 7-member board, one of us voted against it, but it was still adopted. They said, we're going to use the SWAG method. Everybody know what the SWAG method is? Because a person running plat has to select what is the predominant slope in a field. That's how we determine what plat is on a field, by a predominant slope. So it's one person with a guess. It'll never stand up in a court of law because you can't prove what the slope is in a field in Piedmont and Mountain, North Carolina. Plat will not work. Now, to implement plat, NRCS, which is Natural Resource Conservation Service, when plat was adopted in 2003, had over 250 employees in North Carolina. Today, they have less than 120. They're a department of USDA. Who's going to run plat? Who? They're the only ones qualified to do it. They don't have anybody in the field working. But we're going to adopt the rule that says we're going to use plat. Very fine, just going to implement it.
You need to conclude your comments.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Quick.
I can answer any question if I have later. Digesters. Somebody mentioned we're going to have a way to treat this waste. We spent millions of dollars in North Carolina doing research on poultry litter and swine waste finding a way to convert it to renewable energy. Okay? Millions of dollars. In that process, the state required energy companies to get a certain amount of their energy, I forget it was started in 2012 by 2018, from swine and poultry. Zero from dairy. It was not even put into law. Dairy is the only place that has been proven for generations that digesters work. But we can't get any cost share funding to put digesters on dairy farms. But they work. It's a proven technology. It works. But we can't get funding to put them on farm. But we spend millions of dollars in research trying to adopt them to swine and poultry. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug Helen, Holland, and Senator Black.
My name is Doug Holland. I'm a dairy farmer here in the county, a fourth generation farmer. I worked on that farm all my life. You know, when I got here tonight, I read the title on the door out here, and it says swine permits. It's not just about swine permits. It's about dairy permits as well. And dairy is different. In fact, just about every dairy farm is different from the farms around. So a one-size-fits-all plan does not work for all of these permits. We're not like the swine industry, often finding houses, and our farms are tend to be more spread out, and our animals are out in pasture or kept in barns. It is different. You know, a lot of people have said here tonight that they are not against the farmer, but all of these proposals that you're proposing here tonight go against the farmer with added cost and compliance of record keeping and you know, we've mentioned the record keeping here tonight. Some have said it should be made public. The record keeping that we keep is already gone over by a trained inspector, a state employee who comes out to our farm and inspects those records. So they're already gone over by someone who knows what he's looking at. The general public would not understand those records. You know, we as farmers don't have access to endless tax dollars and to install equipment and hire secretaries to do all this kind of paperwork you're putting on us here tonight. Some have mentioned industrial farms. I have a problem with that term, and it's used loosely. I know a lot of swine farmers. I know almost every dairy farmer in this state, and they are family farms. They're not industrial farms. They're family farms. They're owned by families. They're operated by families. And I want you to keep that in mind when you propose these records. It does change people's lives. You know, some have said they don't see anything wrong with installing these simple monitoring systems. Well, there's nothing simple about a groundwater well. The upkeep it takes to keep that up, the records keeping that goes along with it, hiring people to install it. All of these requirements put added cost on the farm. And us in the dairy industry, you've all heard it, financially is not a good time to be in the dairy business. It's tough. Just to mention some specifics in your plan, the state law is based on nitrogen, not phosphorus. In your very definitions, you mention agronomic rates. It has no mention of phosphorus there. It only mentions nitrogen. You know, we don't have a technical specialist to do these plat assessments you're talking about today. It's hard enough to get them to do simple changes like add a crop or add a field to your plant. To have them go out and do plat assessments, it's going to take a lot longer than 12 months. This totally changes the plan, and it's going to take a lot longer than 12 months. The threshold has to be much higher than 400. And the reason for that is phosphorus does not move in the soil unless the soil moves itself. And that's been proven time and time again. And as we as farmers, we've installed no-till crops and cover crops and all these best management practices have stopped that from moving as much as it used to. You mentioned irrigation equipment. You want us to install rain breakers on that. When you install those type things on your irrigation equipment, it causes water hammer. And that tends to tear up your equipment. We're already out there supervising that irrigation equipment. Requiring us to install these automatic procedures, simply not necessary. You want us to survey our pond markers. Well, that's an added cost every time we have to have a surveyor out there every 5 years to survey that marker. The inspector already comes out and he looks at that marker every time he comes out to our farm. So it's already being looked at by your inspector. He can do that. Groundwater monitoring, you mentioned. It mentions it in floodplains only. If a waste storage pond is in a floodplain, you want us to install groundwater. Why just the floodplains? Why not everywhere? But the groundwater monitoring, it goes back to scientific proof. All of these things go back to that. Is there a problem? Well, for the dairy issue, there has not been a problem. We're spreading that waste in agronomic rates. We're putting it out there. I go back to this. Is there a problem that has been proven with scientific information? I don't think there is. I think we're doing a great job applying waste. We're not over-applying it. We're trying to do the best job we can possible to put it out there in the agronomic rates. So I just urge you to think this thing through. Every time this permit comes up, we go through the same process of adding more and more regulations. It gets to be a daunting task to have to change the whole way of doing things because someone thinks there's a problem. The problems haven't been proven scientifically. There's a lot of emotion here on this. I understand that with the swine industry especially. It's not about emotion. It's about scientific proof. That's what we're asking here. We're asking for some common sense, scientific proof of a problem. Don't overburden a farmer to prove itself. Ground well monitoring. I don't think there's a farmer out here that would be against that if you prove there is a problem there. But don't ask him to just put in a well because you think there might be a problem there. Until you prove there is, it's not necessary. Thank you.
All right, Senator Blount.
Hello, I'm Cinnamon Black. I have 12 years experience in water quality, wastewater management, and water resources. I currently own a small business where I teach water and wastewater continuing education classes, and I'm a biological wastewater operator myself. I also did my graduate studies at a university where I directly myself monitored the bores. This was in a different country, in Australia, and I monitored bores, which are basically the same as wells, in the paddocks there that we had at my university for the vet fields, and this is where I found the largest spikes in nitrogen that made the water there unfit for human consumption. So I do have direct experience with the research that was suggested before. We do know this is happening, so thank you for the state for many of the things that you have changed in the current permit. However, I'm asking you to do more. As a biological wastewater operator, I know, and as a citizen, I know that when I defecate in my toilet in Durham, North Carolina, it goes to the wastewater treatment plant where it's treated. Now, if my sewer line were to fail, and if that waste were to go into the creek, then the city would not only fine me, but they would make me to repair that under the illicit discharge and the NPDES permit that they have to upheld. Yet 1,000 hogs can defecate in somewhere like Duplin County, and we assume that this waste does not need to be treated. This is not the case. Science does not change just when we enter a farm. Poop is still poop, and it's full of pathogens. It needs to be treated. Science does not change just because an area is zoned agricultural. And as much as my heart goes out to the farmers that have said their pleas about the money that they need to make these things happen, science does not change due to someone's financial ability to make that happen. Science is still science. As a biological operator, had I failed to treat the wastewater at the plant that I worked at, had that polluted the water downstream, then my plant could have been held legally responsible, and I could have even faced jail or prison had I not delivered the responsibilities that I had as an operator. This is under the NPDES permit, which requires this and requires that the water that comes out, the effluent at the end of the plant, actually has to meet stringent restrictions, that we have to test for this daily, multiple times. We're testing for thousands of different pollutants. And I know this, that the water that we spray onto our fields is first treated. Now, granted, it's not perfect. There can be heavy metals in there. There can be other things. But it is required that we treat that. And we realized in the past, because my plant in the 1970s was spraying this water onto fields, and what it did was it polluted the groundwater of the local wells around that. And they had to be stopped. They were no longer allowed to spray. They had to drastically change, and the state changed and made them do permits. But this is not happening with hog waste. And most of the comments that I have, please do note, are in reference to hog waste. The current permit does not even adapt to the 1980s science. We are so far behind that from the outside, from a different country, we actually look, when we are treating our animal waste, like we are a third world country. So I am begging, I am asking for this state to please require testing. This waste should be treated. It should be treated under the Clean Water Act. It should be treated with the accordances just as wastewater would be treated. Enacting things such as sludge digesters, activated solids, biosolids, biological nutrient reduction, having the rain sensors, all of these things. And obviously, the farmers need a lifeline to be able to get them there. How about we hold the people who are accountable, such as the large corporations that produce this waste? Thank you.
All right, is there anyone else in the crowd that likes on it? If you want to finish it, let me see if there's anybody else first that has it. Anybody else? Go on. Could you restate your name?
Craig Frazier. I didn't finish earlier. I didn't cover this fact that our farm tried to go to an organic farm, which most people would love to have organic. You can't afford to go organic. There's not enough nitrogen in dairy waste to grow a crop. You must supplement that nitrogen. Nitrogen's over $900 a ton, organic nitrogen. You can't afford to grow a crop feeding cows. So we had to kind of scrap the organic idea because of that very fact. And she mentioned this, the water was treated. Yes, the water is treated from a wastewater treatment plant from the municipality before the water is released into our waterways. However, what they remove from that water in the treatment process is not treated. It is dumped on farms in sludge. That's where it goes. It is not a treated product. They treat the water so they can release the water. We can do that with animal waste. We can treat it and we can dump the clean water, but the waste still has to go somewhere. Sadly, that's where the difference is between swine, poultry, and cattle. Cattle are ruminating animals. We feed forage from our cropland to our cattle. That means we harvest everything but the stubble and the roots. We haul it to the farm, we feed it to the animal. We have to haul that back to the cropland or you will grow no crops. I refer to it as raping the soil. If you continually take off and you don't put back, that land becomes non-fertile. It will not grow a crop. If you have a garden, you will realize that. You're constantly adding something back. It's called organic matter. Manure from a cow is nothing but organic matter. That's all it is. We use that organic matter to grow the next crop to feed that animal. Swine, poultry, that's not the case. I'm perfectly aware of that. They haul in tons of grain, run them through it, and spread it on grass field to get rid of it. We spread waste on dairy land to grow the feed for those animals, and we can't grow enough feed because you can't have enough to go back. Because the cow utilizes part of those nutrients to make the milk that goes out in another tank. So those are my other comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If there's no one else who wishes to speak, based on the information received tonight and throughout the comment period, a recommendation will be made to the Director of the Division of Water Resources for her consideration in making a final decision whether to issue, deny, or revise these draft state general permits. As a reminder, public comment period closes March 4th. Written comments should be submitted by email or mail to the address that's found in the handouts about the table tonight.
It's on the board.
I'd like to thank all of you for attendance and interest. The meeting is now closed.
Is it off? No, I think it's still recording. I'm going to push this red button.
Okay.
Does that seem good?